Time Enough for Money by Tony Jones. Lawrence sat hunched against the side of a train carriage nursing a hangover. In front of his cramped seat on a narrow, fold-out rest was a half-full cup of coffee, next to which was a crumpled flapjack wrapper. He'd been staring out of the window, but decided it was simpler to shut his eyes and rest. He'd left his headphones in the hotel room when he'd rushed out, leaving his room service breakfast unfinished. He had more important things to worry about. After maybe 15 minutes, he gave up trying to doze. Being a Sunday, the train stopped at every little station. In his rush to get back to work, he hadn't checked the timetable and had caught a stopping train instead of the express. Too late now. Every stop the doors opened, the loudspeakers announced the final stop, the upcoming stop, the same safety instructions, and something incomprehensible about engineering works. Lawrence couldn't settle, so sat back up straight and tried some more of the now cold coffee. The painkillers he'd grabbed at the station had made no difference. Maybe champagne needed something more upmarket. He chuckled to himself as the idea occurred to him.
"It's him, I tell you," a woman said from across the carriage. "From the paper. Look, it's his picture."
Lawrence tried hard not to look round, but instead grabbed his coffee and snatched a glimpse to his right before taking a large gulp. Across the aisle were two women in their early 20s. They were both dressed in tight white tops. Both had bottle blonde hair, red lipstick, and too much makeup. Not the sort who normally gave him a second glance unless they were as drunk as he'd been last night. As he drank his coffee, one of the women nudged the other and showed her a newspaper.
"Look, I tell you, it's him," the woman said.
"It looks a bit like him, though not as good looking," her friend said.
"I tell you, it's him. Maybe we should talk to him."
"What's he going to be doing on a train in the middle of nowhere on a Sunday?
He'd be in first class or something, wouldn't he? I'd be halfway to America on a big jet if it was me, or in a flash car. I wouldn't be sat on a train."
"Suppose you're right," the first woman said. "Still, it doesn't half look like him." Lawrence managed to avoid turning to face the women or reacting. They had a point. He'd bought a standard ticket without thinking. He could have gone first class, though on this little train that was almost certainly not worth doing. Maybe he should have just hired a taxi from central London. He could afford it for at least the next few hours. The women got off at the next stop, and Lawrence could see they had short, tight black skirts as tight as their tops. One of them smiled at him as they walked past, and he could still see them looking at him from the platform. One of them had even taken out her phone to grab a picture. They'd left the newspaper behind. Lawrence waited until the train had resumed its slow journey and grabbed the paper from the now empty seat. He sat back down and read, "Student named as one of two UK jackpot winners." The paper had a picture of him before he'd started drinking the champagne. He was flanked by two models. He peered hard at the picture but couldn't make out which one it was who had slipped him a piece of paper with her mobile number and a list of suggestions as to how they could spend the weekend. Despite his newfound fame and fortune, he'd ended up spending the latter part of the evening drinking on his own. Things had been simpler when it was just horse racing he was cheating at. He'd ended up at 2 a.m. drinking alone in the bar of his hotel. It was so discreet, even his fortune was of no real consequence, neither to the well-trained staff nor any of the other guests. All ignored him with a practiced indifference. The bar was the most luxurious place he had wasted his life in. Thick pile carpets, several waiters, the kind of leather seats you could fall into and never get up, and an overwhelming sense of opulence. Lawrence could not relax.
"More champagne, sir?" a waiter asked.
Lawrence felt like asking for a lager and a takeaway curry. Doubtless the hotel could easily provide and nobody would bat an eyelid. He stood, and surprised he could still speak coherently, asked for a bottle for his room. The waiter signaled one of the younger members of hotel staff, who walked Lawrence back to his penthouse suite, set a bottle of champagne down in an ice bucket, then stood while Lawrence sat down in a chair no less comfortable than those downstairs. Neither spoke until after what seemed to be several minutes the hotel porter broke the silence. "Anything else, sir?" the porter asked. Lawrence wondered just what else he could need. The suite was more luxurious than his digs and probably cost more per night than he earned in a month. Seeing the porter was clearly waiting for something, Lawrence thought about how perfect his life was.
"No, nothing more," he said.
"Very good, sir," the porter said without moving. He did lift his left hand slightly and turn the palm towards Lawrence. "Oh," Lawrence said. "Right." He fumbled in a pocket, took out a fat roll of 20-pound notes, and peeled one off. He looked at it for a moment, then handed it across. The porter folded it away with a practiced motion Lawrence couldn't follow, nodded, then left. Lawrence sat alone. He thought of turning on the TV. He thought about getting into bed. He thought about drinking a glass of water. The next thought he had was an unadventurous, "Where am I?" as he came to face down on one of the suite's sofas. He could see an unopened bottle of champagne, some bags of expensive clothes he hadn't put away in the wardrobe, and a clock. It was almost 10. He stood, slowly removed yesterday's disheveled outfit, and opened the door to a bathroom bigger than his bedsit. He ran the shower, thought about shaving, then decided to stand under the powerful jets of hot water until he felt fully conscious. 2 minutes later, he leaped from the shower dripping, turned off the water as fast as he could, and began swearing. His every word was blasphemy as he struggled into his usual clothes, ignoring the stuff that had cost hundreds of pounds. He grabbed his roll of money, wallet, and keys before leaving the room at a run. "All change, sir," Lawrence woke with a start. For a moment, he was unclear on what was dream, what reality. He was leaning against the side of the train carriage, and a well-tanned Eastern European man in his mid-20s was shaking his shoulder. Lawrence blinked twice and saw the man was smiling, had short black hair, and was wearing the uniform of one of the train crew. "All change, sir," the man said. "Engineering works?" There was an announcement. Lawrence looked around the carriage, which was deserted apart from the two of them. He grabbed his bag, stuffed the newspaper inside, and stood up. The other man moved back and gestured to the carriage door as he spoke once more. "There's a replacement bus service running through." "Thanks," Lawrence said. The man just smiled a short smile and moved on to check the rest of the train. Lawrence went through the ticket barrier and into a small waiting area. There was no sign of anyone else. No passengers, staff, and more importantly, no sign of a bus. He rushed outside and looked up and down the road. The station was at the edge of a few houses. A nearby pub had boarded windows and faded paintwork, but no signs of life. There were no taxis, no phone boxes, and no other people around. Why did it have to be Sunday afternoon? He turned back to the station as a man in his 40s appeared from the car park on a bike. He had blonde hair, which protruded from under a cycle helmet. Lawrence waved him down. "Sorry," Lawrence said. "Do you know anything about the bus?"
"Left 20 minutes ago," the cyclist said. "I've been fixing a puncture, that's why I'm leaving just now. The missus won't be pleased, I said I'd be back much sooner."
"Do you know when the next bus is due?" Lawrence asked.
"No idea," the cyclist said. "The next train isn't due for half an hour, so I imagine it'll be then."
Lawrence knew his time was running out. He had to get back to the lab as soon as possible and no later than 3:52.
"Your bike," Lawrence said. "How much do you want for it?"
"Sorry? I know it sounds mad, but I really have to be somewhere. How much for your bike?"
"Are you serious?" the cyclist said.
"Totally. I'll give you £200 for it."
The other man looked at Lawrence, then down again at his bike. "And how do I get home?" "Okay," Lawrence said. £300. "And where's the money?"
Lawrence pulled a roll of notes from his jacket pocket and counted out £300. The cyclist dismounted, laughed, held out a hand for the cash, and then let Lawrence take the bike from him. "Cheers," Lawrence said as he got on and tried to adjust the seat.
"You'll need a helmet," the other man said, but made no move to take his off.
Lawrence looked at the helmet, which was bright orange, functional, and looked to be in no better state than the bike.
"How much?"
£60.
Lawrence peeled 3 more notes from his now smaller roll of money, took the helmet, and tried it on. At least he had an idea of the local geography. The other man went inside the station, and Lawrence thought no more of him. 20 minutes later, Lawrence was standing beside a country lane swearing at the bike. He'd managed half a mile before the front tire had deflated and he'd had to give up. The brakes were poor, and in trying to stop, the chain had slipped. He'd tried to sort out the chain and pump up the tire. No luck. He swore a few more times, then had to make way as a taxi passed by. In the back seat, he saw the blonde-haired man waving at him and laughing. Lawrence swore one more time, gave the bike a couple of kicks, dumped the helmet in a ditch, and trudged back to the station, arriving just as a bus was pulling out. He ran out to block its way, and much to the amusement of the passengers, had to grovel to the driver before he was allowed on board. He took a seat at the back and wondered how much time he had left. He didn't believe in fate. After all, how could he, given what he knew, but life seemed to have turned against him. Maybe he shouldn't have cheated to win the lottery. Maybe he should have stuck to horse racing. Lawrence was counting the money he'd just won from the bookmakers. He counted off the notes once more. £240. Not bad for a £20 bet.
He was too busy concentrating to notice the woman he bumped into. "Sorry," he said before he realized who it was. "Sorry, Angela."
"Someone's lucky today," Angela said.
"Yes, that's a couple now, Pastier Donata and Valora. What about you, anything?"
"I had some money on Valora as well," she said. "I'm just collecting it now. I've never been racing, have you?"
Lawrence put away his winnings and looked at her. It was a warm day, and a group from work had decided to go to the races. He'd been keen to test his experiments and had agreed straight away. He hadn't paid attention to the others, and Angela in particular had spent most of the time with the rest while he'd been fascinated to see the races unfold exactly as he expected them to. Angela was dressed for the occasion, and he was surprised as to how attractive she was outside of the lab. Instead of her normal shapeless hoodie and jeans, she wore a knee-length skirt, bright blue sandals, and a flowery blouse. Her hair was loose and caught the breeze. Lawrence felt himself blushing.
Yeah, Lawrence said, a couple of times.
There was a pause. Lawrence wanted to speak, but no words came. After a moment, Angela spoke.
"Some of us thought we might head off and get to town early for a drink. We might go for a meal or a film. Do you fancy it?"
There was something about the way she said the word fancy made his throat go dry. He realized he wanted nothing more than to get to know her better, but he'd also planned to win more money.
"I've just put some money on Cortado in the next race," he said.
8-1. Angela's lips pursed slightly, then relaxed.
"Not to worry," she said. "Perhaps another time."
"Perhaps," Lawrence said, knowing he'd made a mistake. Later, as he won yet again and set off with his day's winnings back to his empty flat, he wished he'd had the sense to ask for her number so they could have met up later on. If only he could go back in time and tell himself. He smiled. He hadn't, so he wouldn't. He wasn't sure about the tenses, which weren't designed for people with his perspective on cause and effect. Lawrence was sitting in the back of a taxi, almost shouting directions to the driver and checking the time on the dashboard clock every few moments. Almost before the taxi had stopped outside the innocuous office building, Lawrence was opening its door and climbing out, still clutching his bag. He gave the driver 3 20-pound notes and rushed to the front of the nearby building without waiting for his change. The door was shut, and he fumbled through his pockets and bag for his pass. The taxi drove away, leaving him alone outside the door of one of the many low brick-built offices on the out-of-town business park. Cursing, he tried the building door, but it was locked. He pushed the buzzer, waiting for 10 seconds, then pushed it again. He waited another 10 seconds, then pushed the buzzer once more without realizing it. Still no response, so he started hammering on the door. After what seemed like several minutes, he saw a door open and a guard appear behind the desk. Lawrence released the buzzer and stopped hammering as the guard reached down and pressed a switch, releasing the lock. Lawrence entered and looked at the guard, a small, middle-aged man with small round glasses and a scruffy beard who was also completely bald. Lawrence recognized him as one of the guards who generally worked weekends and evenings. "What's the problem?" the guard asked. "Sorry, I left my pass at home. I need something from the lab." The guard looked at Lawrence, then shook his head. "If you don't have your pass, you have to come back tomorrow. I can't let you in if nobody vouches for you."
"But you know me," Lawrence said. "Lawrence! Lawrence Ross! I've been working in the satellite monitoring lab for nearly 2 years. You know me."
"That's as may be, Mr. Ross," the guard said. "Procedure's procedure. I can't just let anybody in, not with all the valuable equipment." The guard paused. "Not that you'd be after stealing anything now, would you? Not with all your money." "If you only knew," thought Lawrence as he looked at the clock above the reception desk, "if I don't get to the lab in the next 3 minutes, there won't be any money." Lawrence reached into his pocket, withdrew a few of his remaining notes, and held them out. "Look," Lawrence said, "I just want to get some personal things I left in my desk. I thought if I came in now, I'd miss any fuss. Why don't you get yourself a pizza delivered? My treat." The guard took the notes and counted them before folding them away into a pocket. He then took out a key, opened a drawer, and held out a white pass marked "Unescorted Visitor" in large orange letters. "As it's you, sir," the guard said, handing over the pass. Lawrence grabbed the pass and rushed off. He hoped the clock was fast. If it wasn't, he was too late. Then what would happen? Would he even have any memories of winning the money? He ran down a corridor to his lab, a room with several desks, chairs, computer screens, and on the wall, a digital clock showing 3 time zones. The clock told him the bad news. He was too late. He sat down at the nearest chair and started tapping at the keyboard in front of him. He was too late. He lifted his bag, fumbled, and pulled out the newspaper he'd saved. The story was still there. It showed him standing with the two models. He felt in his pocket and could feel what was left of his money.
"I don't understand," he said to nobody in particular. "And what don't you understand?" a woman's voice asked from behind him. He swiveled in the chair and saw Angela by the office door.
"Don't you know how to spend all your money?" she asked.
"Sorry," Lawrence said. "I just... look, I've had a lot of trouble trying to get here."
Angela walked across and took the paper from him. As she opened it, Lawrence stood up so he was only a short distance from her.
"I can see why you look so tired if this is how you spent last night," Angela said, pointing to the two women in the picture.
Lawrence felt himself turning red. "Nothing happened," he said. "I spent the evening drinking expensive drinks I didn't really like in a very expensive hotel on my own, wondering what to do with my life."
"Poor you."
"Apparently not," Lawrence said. He looked at Angela and caught her looking straight at him. She had the same look of expectation he'd seen at the race course.
"Do you fancy... do you want to have dinner?" he asked.
Angela smiled. Not a huge smile, but she looked pleased.
"I hope you don't think I'm one of those women who are easily impressed by money," she said. "I've got a brain, you know. Maybe not as clever as yours, but not as stupid either."
Lawrence was confused. "Clever?" he asked. "What do you mean?"
"Clever," Angela said. "As in figuring out the interference pattern on the Chinese satellite signal was a message from the future. Clever as in realizing the ground-to-space tracking signal was interacting with whatever device they have on board. Clever as in recognizing it was the music you played through the system when you worked weekends. Stupid as in not hiding your notes on the computer. Stupid as in not noticing I always worked when you did, even on Sundays and late nights."
"But," Lawrence said, "we have to work odd hours to test the satellite debris tracking system. I thought you enjoyed working on your thesis. You've made great progress on your PhD. Everyone says so." "Hang on.
You know about the signals?" "I said you were stupid. How do you think I picked the winning horse when I knew nothing about racing? I've been watching you for months. Pity you never noticed."
"I don't understand."
"You said..."
"Which bit?" Angela asked. Lawrence pointed to the newspaper.
"I can only send signals just over 83 hours back in time. I'm too late. I didn't send the winning numbers, so how did I get them? How did I win half the lottery?"
Angela smiled.
"I said you were stupid."
Lawrence couldn't find anything to say. He stood spellbound as she stepped closer and realized they were almost of a height, their eyes level. He rather liked her eyes. They spoke of promises and the future. The money seemed unimportant now.
"Who do you think sent the message?" Angela asked.
"You weren't here. A good job one of us is practical-minded." She leaned forward and kissed him for a moment on the cheek.
"Besides, who do you think bought the other winning ticket?"
Lawrence smiled, then laughed. He kissed her back, this time full on the lips.
"Let's get out of here," Angela said. "Later on, there'll be time enough for money."